Everyone, and welcome to our service this morning, and a brand new series that we're going to start for the next couple of weeks. Before we turn to Exodus and start exploring the journey of the people of God out of Egypt into the wilderness, and then looking beyond to the promised land. But before we come and do this, I want to just spend some time looking at some psalms, and we're going to spend the next 3 weeks looking at psalms to pray when you need God's help. One of the things, especially for men, and it is certainly a male thing, is that we don't really like asking for help. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but you may have been driving with your partner somewhere, and you get lost. And it's the man that's driving, and you kind of, 10 minutes into being lost, the man's still pretending that he knows where he's going, and he'll suss it. And then at this point, the partner suggests, why don't you stop and ask someone? To which usually the man kind of goes, no, we're not going to do that. I'll find it. And then another 10 minutes go around, and still we're lost. And eventually, begrudgingly, a man will then ask for help and in direction, or you'll spend the next hour and a half until they find it eventually. And there's just something in us that we don't like asking for help. And it's true sometimes in relation to God. There's something within us that makes us reluctant to ask God for things. Sometimes it's because we think God isn't interested in us and our circumstance. God's way too busy running the universe to be interested in what I'm going through and what I'm feeling. And I'm just not that significant to this God. Or sometimes people feel that they're not good enough. And, you know, I can ask God for anything. I'm just not particularly good. Or maybe their understanding of God is kind of skewed, that God is just distant and far away and emotionally unattached. And so there's no point asking him because he just won't hear us anyway. You know, the Psalms show us one thing, if they show us anything, which is whatever your need is, tell God. As we look at the Psalms, they're full of illustrations of people sharing their emotions, sharing their frustrations, and sharing their need with God. The psalmists don't hold back when they need help or protection or deliverance, and neither should you. And so what I want to do over the next few weeks is look at Psalms that provide us with a pattern to ask God for help. And what we should do when we're asking God in relation to our needs. The psalm that we're looking at this morning is Psalm 86. And if you look at Psalm 86, it has a very distinctive structure. It's a fairly simple structure. It has an opening and closing appeal to God. So it asks for something at the beginning and it asks for something at the end. And then there, right in the middle of it, verses 8 through 10, there is a deliberate act of praise where the psalmist reminds himself of the nature of the God he is appealing to. And then this is a very important aspect in relation to our prayers for help. You see, if we just ask for prayer for a need that we have, that in and of itself isn't enough. And in fact, actually just doing that makes us quite needy. And all that happens is we get a deeper sense of our despair and the situation that we're finding. Because if we just are concerned and focused on our needs and our circumstances and the things that we're asking God for, we're actually missing the way that God intends us to appeal to him for help. Because the appeal to God for help are designed to move us from a focus from our circumstances towards an understanding of who God is. There's a wonderful phrase in Psalm 86 that we'll see, where the psalmist says, God, give me an undivided heart. And you go, undivided heart? What's that about? What is an undivided heart? And in the Old Testament, heart is, it refers, the modern equivalent would be the idea of mind or our reasoning, our inner thoughts, our inner workings. And what it's saying is, Lord, let my thoughts and attentions be undivided. In other words, don't let me be distracted. Don't let me be preoccupied with other things. My granddaughter was over yesterday, and obviously little babies cry quite a bit. And so of course, one of the things you do as a parent, if your child is crying lots, is that you try and distract them. You shake keys at them, or you make funny noises, or you sing, or whatever, so that they forget about the fact that they're upset. They calm down a little bit and hopefully go to sleep. That's your prayer anyway. And it's like, we're like little kids. What happens is we just get distracted by the need and the problems and the circumstances that we have. And as the distractions occur, we lose our focus. And so the psalmist talks about an undivided heart. And what he's saying is, Lord, bring my attention back from all this stuff I'm experiencing, all the circumstances that are going around, so that I focus on you and understand who you are, so that I can turn and address the needs and the circumstances that I'm facing. See, you see this pattern actually laid out in miniature if you look at verses 5 through 7. There the psalmist says, you, Lord, are forgiving and good, abounding in love to all who call to you. The psalmist affirms who God is. Who is God? He is forgiving and good, abounding in love to all who call. And then he says, hear my prayer, Lord. Listen to my cry for mercy. When I am in distress, I call to you because you answer me. One of the brilliant things is that here we see a prayer with confidence. We only read a couple of verses from the New Testament this morning, but it talks about approaching the throne of grace with confidence. And it's this idea that when we come to speak to God, we can approach the Creator God. We can approach who He is with confidence. We do that because of the work of Christ, His death and resurrection, and we have confidence as we approach Him. Again, Paul in Romans talks about the fact that we come into the presence of our God and we call Him Abba, Father. And I love that phrase. Abba is like, it would be, the modern equivalent would be something like daddy, but more grown up, if you like. But it's that sort of reference. And what Paul is saying is that we can come to God with confidence because of the finished work of Christ. And we can have an intimacy with the Creator of the universe and refer to Him as Abba, our Father. And Jesus explains in His teaching, He says, you know, God, you know, you as earthly, fallen, sinful human beings know how to be good fathers. And He says, don't you think so much more your Heavenly Father knows how to be a good father and how He knows to care for you. And so when we come, the psalm is reflecting a confidence. I can go and speak to my God because I recognize who He is and I recognize who I am. And actually, the psalm itself just kind of goes through this, recognizing who we are and then recognizing who God is. The second thing that we see in this psalm is that it is prayed with self-awareness. Right at the start, David, who's the reported writer of this psalm, comes and he says, hear me, Lord, and answer me, for I am pure and needy. Interesting way to start out. The psalm is prayed by David, and And it's interesting that he describes himself as poor and needy. And commentators have kind of debated when, what does he mean by poor and needy? And some of them believe that he isn't talking about poor and needy in a material sense. Certainly if he was king when he wrote this, he was definitely not poor and needy. He was a very wealthy, powerful individual, and he had a lot of resource that was available to him. And yet, he recognizes that before God, he is without resource. He actually recognizes that before God, he is in desperate need. To Jesus, in his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, he said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." It's the way he starts. And he says, you know, you are going to know the blessing of God if you understand the limitation of your own resource. If you understand your need of God, even if you have things sussed materially, even if things seem okay surrounding you, nevertheless, you are desperately in need of knowing God and his work in your life. The psalmist then goes on to give some substance to this without resource. He says, "I'm in need of your protection, of your mercy, and your joy." And then, and so the psalmist prays and he cries out and he said, "Lord, protect me." Again, in the ancient world, there were many things that people felt vulnerable to, and I guess a sense of vulnerability would be a mark of life in the ancient world. You never knew what was going to happen. And maybe today some of us feel the same in terms of COVID. We need a sense of protection. And everywhere you go, everybody's trying to get protection, wearing masks and visors and antiseptics and everything, the sense of we need to be protected. But David understands that true protection comes from God, and that actually God is the source of our security. He then talks about his need of mercy. "Lord, I need your mercy. Lord, I need you not to respond to what I do, but to respond through who you are." You see, David recognized that his actions didn't deserve anything other than God's judgment. And yet, he prays for God's mercy. "God, don't respond to me in the way that I deserve to be responded to." And lastly, he prays for joy. You know, often we fail to see God as the source of happiness. And we think happiness is found in 150 other places. It's found in our relationships. It's found in our material prosperity. It's found in our career. It's found in where we're able to live. But you know what? None of these things provide lasting happiness. God is ultimately the source of joy. And then one of the things, I remember when I went to Uganda a number of years ago, and I went out and I was with Tear Fund, and they talk about an immersion experience. And we were staying in a village in the middle of nowhere. This village had no electricity. And I remember I took an iPad, a very early iPad, into the village. And I remember showing them the iPad, and it was as if I'd brought something from the surface of the moon. It was an incredible experience, and yet the people had a deep sense of joy, although they had virtually nothing materially. You know, there's a recognition that the psalmist needs God's protection, mercy, and joy. There's also a recognition that he is in relationship with God. He says, "Guard my life, for I am faithful to you. Save your servant who trusts in you." See the image of a servant, and actually, "God, I'm in a relationship with you. I'm one of your servants." Jesus in the New Testament says, you know, actually, because of my work, we're not even just servants now, we're children of this God. And the recognition that there is a trust, and that he trusts his God because he is in a relationship with him. And because he is in that relationship, he's not going to focus on his circumstances. He's going to focus on his God. See, Whenever we face a situation, we have a tendency, a difficult situation, we have a tendency just to focus on those circumstances. We have a tendency to just forget about everything else. And yet here we see David, when he faces a difficult situation, what he does is he focuses on his relationship. He focuses on who he is. He thinks about the fact that I am a son of the king. And that, you know, as a son of the king, although I'm facing a difficult situation, I'm facing a significant challenge, nevertheless, I'm in this relationship. And I'm not going to lose sight of the fact that I'm in this relationship. And so he focuses on the fact of God's covenant love towards him. And so, although he recognizes his need, he also recognizes the wonderful nature of the relationship that he has to God. And so he doesn't have to focus on the circumstances. And he can pray, Lord, let me raise my soul to you. And again, what does that mean to raise his soul to God? But it's this image of actually stirring up his inner sense to focus on that relationship, to focus on the wonderful nature of the relationship that he has. You know, I'm going through this situation, but I'm still a child of God. And one of the things that I sometimes find quite inspirational about Christians and who face the reality of death is that many times you go in and you'll sit maybe at a hospital bedside and you'll talk to them or chat to them as they're facing the end of their life. And yet many times for Christians, their focus is not on their situation. It's not on a self-pitying, but it's on the fact that I'm a child of the King. And that although I'm facing this, I'm in a relationship with my God. The third thing then that the psalmist does is he prays with confidence and he prays with self-awareness. But then we see him praying with a God awareness. And if we look at verses 8 through 10, we see this. He turns his attention from an awareness of his situation and his need, but also his relationship to God. And then he focuses on who God is. And he says this, among the gods there is none like you, Lord. No deeds can compare with yours. What he's saying there, and he's making a comparison, he's saying, in the spiritual realm or the material realm, there is nothing like my God. Nothing like my God. He is the one and only, and that there's nothing spiritually in the unseen realm, and there's nothing in the seen realm that deeds is referring to the idea of creation and God's work of creation. And he's saying there's nothing like God. You look at all of it. And our God transcends everything in this. You see, this wonder of the distinctiveness of our God. The problem is if we put our trust in anything other than that God, we will be disappointed and let down. But then he goes on in verses 9 through 10, to affirm something else. He says, all the nations you have made will come and worship before you, Lord. They will bring glory to your name, for you are great and do marvelous deeds. You alone are God. So here he prays something else. He moves from the distinctiveness of God to understand that he is the Lord of history. One of the things that is really corny, and I'm about to share it, but is that sometimes when people talk about history, they divide it into two bits, his story and the idea that actually history is governed by God. And what the psalmist is saying here is he's saying, you know, we know the end of the story. He said, I'm going through a difficult situation here, but he says, I know the end of the story, which is that people will acknowledge you and come and worship you. All the nations will worship before you, Lord. And he says, you know, it's like at the back of the book, if you get to the back of the Bible and you read the back of the Bible and it says, you know, despite everything we're going through, we win. And it's always reassuring. I don't know if you ever used to watch Scotland playing football, and it would be horrible, especially, and you know, if I hadn't been able to watch the game live, there would always be a temptation to try and get the score before you watch the game. And I always quite liked that occasionally when Scotland won. If you knew that Scotland won, and so when you started to watch the game and you knew they were 2-0 down, and but you knew the final score, you knew they were going to come back, something was going to happen, it was going to change. And it's like this, the psalmist is saying, you know, despite the need, despite the circumstance, despite how it looks, you are the Lord of history, and I know that you're taking us to that point of victory. And I stand in the reality of the victory that you are moving towards us. And then he says this, for you are great and do marvelous deeds. You alone are God. And so he moves from that end point of victory and he says, God, now act in this situation. Now, God, act in my situation. And he invites God to address the situation that he is facing, in the awareness of who that God is as the Lord of history, in the confidence of the victory that is going to be won at the end of things. And then he goes on to pray, basically, show me what you are doing. You are a God who's going to work at the end of time, and we know about the victory. And then he says, but you're a God who is at work at this moment. And so despite my circumstances, despite what I'm going through, I know that you must be at work here in this situation. And so show me what is happening. And in verse 11, he says this, teach me your way, Lord, that I may rely on your faithfulness. Give me an undivided heart that I may fear your name. See, what he prays there is he says, God, let me see what you're doing in this situation so that I can walk in your ways. What he's saying is, I want my life to line up with your purposes. And you know, it may be that there was a great job opportunity that you had that's just not happened. Or there was a situation where you really wanted to something to happen and it just hasn't happened. And you go and you say, God, what are you doing here? You know what? And then you can get frustrated, you can get upset, you can kick against it if you choose. And actually the question is, Lord, what are you doing here? And God might say, well, actually, the reason I'm doing this is so that you learn patience. You learn to wait. And so he says, oh, God, I've got that. So help me line my life up with what your purpose is here in this situation. You know, help me not to be working against you in what you're trying to do, but line up with what you're trying to do. Maybe God's trying to bring healing in this situation. And so to sit there and say, oh, let's not pray for healing, is not what God is trying to do in that situation. He's saying, Lord, help me get the pattern of my life in line with what you are doing and the way that you're working, so that when you say go, I go. When you say stop and wait, I stop and wait. Help me walk in your ways. And then he says, help me to praise you. Verse 12, I will praise you, Lord, my God, with all my heart. I will glorify your name forever. So he says, Lord, help me to see, not only so I align my life, but so I can praise you and actually acknowledge you as a God who is at work despite the circumstances. So I can have that focus of praise on you. And then he says in verse 13, for God is your love. For great is your love towards you, towards me. You have delivered me from the depths, from the realm of the dead. And the third thing then he says is, show me what you're doing so I can walk in your way, so I can praise you, and so I can understand your love. You see, when I understand that God hasn't abandoned me, when I understand that God hasn't deserted this, that God isn't interested in this situation, that God isn't preoccupied with something else, but I understand that God is at work in this situation, even though you can't see it externally or outwardly, but God is still at work as the Lord of history, I come to understand the depths of his love he has for me, that he cares for me in this situation, right here, right now, despite what I'm going through. And if you read the psalm carefully and as it goes on, you'll actually see that David's situation isn't resolved. It isn't resolved as he writes this psalm. But he's written a psalm which says, God, you know, I thank you for the confidence that I can have to pray as a son. I pray that you will help me to be aware of my own limitations and resources and help me to understand who you are and what you are doing so I can align my life to that, so I can praise you and I can understand just how much you love and care for me in every dimension and aspect of my life right at this moment. Lord, teach me how to pray for your help in my moments of need. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, we thank you for your word. We thank you for this psalm. And we thank you for the way it teaches us to pray when we need your help. Lord, I just ask that we will be a people who will not become so preoccupied with our circumstances, not so preoccupied with our problems, that we lose sight of you, that we lose sight of you and what you are doing. Lord, help us to be self-aware and help us to be God-aware so that we can align the pattern of our lives to what you are doing, that we will never lose sight of how wonderful and amazing you are as our God, and that we will understand the depth of your love towards us in every situation. Lord, I ask this in your name. Amen.